Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
The following broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dalamore.
Thanks for joining us. Episode 924 of I Doubt It Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Dalamore, joined today by the lovely, talented, and indeed scholarly Brittany Page.
And healed from COVID.
And we are maskless.
Yes, because I am healed. I had symptoms for 9 days, tested positive for 7 days, was finally free, am finally free, and you never got it. So yeah. Congratulations.
Well, thanks to the masking in the same home.
Yeah.
Sleeping in separate bedrooms.
Yeah, yeah.
It was...
Sweepy was very confused.
Yeah, not... Didn't figure it out the whole time. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, she was like, why is everything separate? What's going on? Why can't I be in the same room with both of you? I want to sit on the couch and watch TV. Why aren't we doing that?
As soon as it... you contended with multiple... Because you were testing toward the end there, like twice a day, trying to just shake it, hoping it would come up negative.
Well, the line did start.
Yeah, you were contending with like that faint, like you're still positive, but it's like, oh, you still are a little bit not good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But luckily, I mean, because of the measures we took, didn't get it.
Yeah.
Pretty great.
Well, one reason that I could have gotten COVID is because I'm a weak lady. And this is, if we were to like ask Elon Musk, that's probably what he would say, is it's just like, I'm a woman, you know? And the reason that I am making this hypothesis is because of a recent tweet that he sent out. And I want to read it to you, Jesse, because
Elon?
Yes, I want your...
The only person I have blocked on Twitter, by the way, is Elon Musk.
Wow.
Because it's just too much. Because I already see, my feed is already just Elon shit constantly. So it doesn't diminish what I see.
Yes.
I still see all the dumb shit he fucking posts.
Before I read this tweet, can I just say that I feel like there's been a shift over time. I think that when we, several years ago, we've been doing the show for 10 years. I don't remember how I felt about Elon Musk 10 years ago. I know that you have always historically felt negatively about Elon Musk.
Not 15 or so years ago, I was enamored by the releasing all the patents and stuff for, like, I thought, yeah, he's, what a noble guy. He really does have, but that was like 15, 18 years ago.
Yeah. What I'm trying to get at is that there was a period of time when on this show, I don't know when, we started talking negatively about Elon Musk, and it wasn't yet common.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would get a lot of pushback and people who weren't happy that we were you know, speaking negatively about Elon Musk.
Yeah.
But now I feel like it's much more common because people understand that he is a problem. And this tweet should help illustrate that for you. So he retweeted this tweet and said, interesting observation. So here we go. A very interesting observation for everyone. People who can't defend themselves physically, parenthetically, women and low T men. So we're off to a really strong start here.
Wait. Isn't Elon Musk the guy who's like, I hurt my back. I can't do my wrestling with Mark Zuckerberg. I might have to have surgery. Oh, my back. Oh, Mark Zuckerberg. Like, he's this guy, right?
Yes. So
is he a woman or a low T? Which one?
People who can't defend themselves physically, women and low T men, parse information through a consensus filter as a safety mechanism. They literally do not ask, is this true?
They literally, literally do not ask.
They ask, will others be okay with me thinking this is true? This makes them very malleable to brute force manufactured consensus. If every screen they look at says the same thing, they will adopt that position because their brain interprets it as everyone in the tribe believing it. Only high T alpha males and aneurotypical people are actually free to parse new information with an objective, is this true, filter. This is why a republic of high-status males is best for decision-making, democratic, but a democracy only for those who are free to think. And he thinks this is, again, an interesting observation.
So what high-T male wrote that? Certainly a male who I couldn't just very easily beat the living fuck out of. What high T male wrote this?
Here's what I think is funny about this, is he didn't retweet this and say, is this true?
Right.
Like, shouldn't he be actually interrogating and like approaching it with some skepticism?
Yeah, being a high T male who's like, oh, I better question the validity of this.
Right. Instead, he's like, interesting observation. That's true. Retweet.
Who wrote that? Is it a guy who sunbathes his taint? You know, those idiots who are doing that on the Tucker Carlson show.
I have no idea who wrote it. It's from an account called Autism Capital. I don't know if they wrote it or not. It's a meme. But yeah, this is what we have. Elon Musk is putting the thumb on the scale for Trump every chance he gets, and he has turned Twitter into a cesspool. I still use it, though, and I think I'm going to continue to use it. I think...
So it's not just a shit wheel echo chamber?
I mean, yeah, I don't know.
I'm leaning over to Threads more now.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be an alternative to Twitter because Mark Zuckerberg has throttled political content over there and on Instagram. We need a Twitter. We need a digital town square. We remember during the Arab Spring and all of these different activist movements, George Floyd and the uprising that took place after that, Twitter was very instrumental in those things.
Right.
And it's just fucking worthless now.
Yeah, it's a bummer. So I think part of me is just hoping that it comes back somehow, or that this can all be reversed and we can...
I hold out hope, too. I think
go back to how it was.
I mean, it's going
to
be sold for bottom of the basement barrel, bottom of the barrel. Real, it's going to be sold for a very low T price, Brittany Page.
Oh, good.
A very low T price.
Very good.
And then hopefully somebody revives it and like brings it Twitter back, not fucking X, the everything app.
Yeah. So,
starting me off, was in a great mood before we hit record, and look at me now.
Yeah, listen, we're not going to be in such a great mood after we do the show, because we're actually going to be covering a lot of difficult things. So just be aware of that, everybody. And, you know, maybe on that note, we'll start with some listener communication, because that's what we do here on this show. We like to hear from you. So be sure you have the phone number and the email in your phone so you can easily shoot us an email or shoot us a voicemail, 657-464-7609, or you can send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. And first, we have a voicemail from Kristen in California, who is reacting to the Taking Care of Biz segment that we had on the last episode about a bus driver who literally removed her shoes and gave them to an unhoused woman on her bus.
Damn it, Brittany and Jesse. This is Kristen from California, and I was just listening to the story about the bus driver who gave her shoes. And you totally were right, but you this story is completely restored my faith in humanity. Thanks, guys.
Always willing to attempt to restore people's faith in humanity, which I oftentimes have a diminished supply of faith in humanity.
Well, that's really what the Taking Care of Biz segment yes. came out of, was that if you are going to be doing this work where you are paying a lot of attention to the news and you're reading the news and you're watching the videos and you're watching the breaking news every time something terrible happens, you want these moments of, you want these reminders that there are good people out there doing good things and doing good work, because it's so dominated by yeah. bad shit happening.
It's also why we do the work and why we stay engaged. I don't mean you and me. I mean we collectively. It's is for those moments, for those people, to make life easier on fucking people.
Right. But you're right. I should have given a warning as well if you were driving, that it was going to be difficult to listen to and you would start crying if you were driving, not just working. So next time I will expand the activities that one could be participating in that might be affected by the clip. So
or maybe you're just talking to truck driver Brad, who's when he drives, it is work.
Yes, exactly. So thank you for that. And happy that that story was moving. We heard from a lot of you that it was. So I'm glad that people enjoyed that. Now we have a few emails to get to. This first one is from Brian in Montana. I think I'm being impacted by the Elon Musk tweet.
Maybe you are a high T individual.
Hey, Brittany and Jesse. I just finished listening to your latest episode of I Doubt It, episode 923. I wanted to comment on my disappointment at the DNC for not putting forward a speaker representing the Palestinians and their concerns at the convention. I get the concern that the Democrats have, or at least what I assume is their concern, with allowing anything but the Israeli viewpoint being put on display. AIPAC is a very real antagonist to anyone who isn't wholly in the pocket of Israel and their genocidal whims. After all, AIPAC is more than willing to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to go against anyone that doesn't toe the line. The problem I have with the approach that the Democrats seem to embrace is that they are ceding far too much to the Republicans. The Democrats are allowing them to define what the discourse actually is. It will always result in detrimental turnouts for Democrats. Not addressing the problem just allows it to fester. Nobody is arguing that Israel doesn't deserve to be able to defend themselves, but Israel isn't defending themselves anymore. It's just a wholesale slaughter, and it needs to stop. Democrats need to stop trying to appeal to Republicans as fascist light and make the stand that needs to happen before Israel finishes what they started. There are a lot more people, Palestinian Americans and their sympathizers, if I'm using that word correctly, that want to be able to have a clear conscience when voting for Democrats than could ever be dredged by appealing to the right. I hope Brittany feels better soon. Get plenty of rest if you can. Brian from Montana.
Yeah, Brian, I agree. When I talk about what has just turned into, as you put it, as you communicated, I don't remember the exact language, but it is just wholesale slaughter now. It's we've long ago, months ago, passed the threshold of Israel having a right to defend itself, because Israel, of course, you have a right to self-defense, but you know, let's put this in colloquial terms. Since I, you know, if someone attacks you on the street, hits you, and you defend yourself, that's fantastic. You have a right to do so. But you don't get to follow that person home and destroy their house and murder their family in the act of self-defense, because that is no longer self-defense. And that is exactly what we're witnessing with 40 going on 50,000 dead, a massive portion of that being children, women, innocent people who are non-combatants. It's not self-defense anymore. So
I also think it's true that there is not a benefit toward trying to appeal to the Republicans.
Absolutely.
Which is what we're seeing. And it's very disappointing that, you know, in Kamala Harris's first sit-down interview with Tim Walz and Dana Bash on CNN, that she said that she would be willing to appoint a Republican in her administration.
Yeah.
And first of all, it's the media asking questions like this, which is very grating to hear the media continue to try to indicate that there needs to be a coming together between the parties.
Just creating moral equivalence between the two.
Like, I'm just waiting for a question at the debate on the 10th of, now turn to the person next to you and tell them what you like about
them. Say something positive about Donald Trump.
Yeah, tell us what you appreciate about Donald Trump. And I hope she's prepared for that question. And I hope that she says, you know, next question, similar to how she did with her, the attempt of Dana Bash to ask her about her race. Like, oh, Donald Trump says you turned black. What do you have to say to that? Why are you asking that question?
Yeah.
You know, but the same thing with, yes, I would put a Republican in my administration. Why? Donald Trump isn't going to come out and say he's going to put a Democrat in his administration.
And also, why would you want to anyway? Name the Republican you would put in charge of a cabinet-level position. Who? Who?
Right. Well, and someone might say Liz Cheney. But have you heard what Liz Cheney has to say about abortion?
Yeah. Liz Cheney is a fascist ghoul. Just because in this one instance, she stood for democracy and did the obvious fucking thing that Mike Pence did too, it doesn't mean you want Mike Pence as your Secretary of Health and Human Services, Mr. Anti-Abortion, Anti-Healthcare. Yeah, see, it's happening. It's fucking happening.
All right. Well, thank you for that email, Brian in Montana. We appreciate it. We have one more email.
We love the 406.
We have one.
That's Montana's area code.
I figured it was. We have one more email to read, and this is from Anonymous because they did not put their name in the body of the email. And what happens when you don't put your name in the body of the email?
You remain
anonymous.
Anonymous.
All right. Hey, while everyone is focused on November 5th, can you also give a shout out to those states who have the option to vote early? Everyone who is able should take advantage of the days leading up to November 5th and vote in the chance something occurs on the 5th and they don't make it to the polls.
Yeah.
Coming from a Minnesota resident, I'm talking about snowstorms that make people stay home. Here in Minnesota, go Walls, we can vote in person starting September 20th. I can't wait to see the blue wave continue here. Thank you. So I'm going to be linking to a link that this person put in the body of their email at vote.org/early-voting-calendar.
You can also just go to vote.org.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, I'm trying to be specific. So we're going to put that link in the show notes. So look for that. Definitely be prepared. Check your voter registration. Talk to people that you know, because it is September 6th. And like this person says in their email, that voting in person starts for them September 20th.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is happening. It's coming up soon. And we want to be ready to go. So make it happen.
It's a good admonition. It's a good reminder for us that you know, people, we need to get out there.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Yes.
Anonymous.
So thank you again to everyone who called and emailed. You can do that too at 657-464-7609 or by sending an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. We want to give a shout out to our beautiful Patreon supporters. We could not do this work without our beautiful Patreon supporters. And we want to shout out our new Patreon supporters. And that would be Pamela R.
Pamela R.
OON42.
OON42. Or is it? On 42.
Well, it's something. It's something else, but we're going to go. All right. So that's Lauren I.
Lauren I.
Rebecca D.W.
Rebecca D.W.
Stephanie W.
Stephanie W.
Michelle.
Michelle.
Rayfield C.
Rayfield C.
Frank D.
Frank D.
Michael E.
Michael E.
George D.
George D.
Daniel L.
Daniel L.
S.I.
S.I.
Eric B.
Eric B. And Rakim.
Randy T.
Randy T.
Carol W.T.
Carol W.T.
G.G.
G.G.
And Dennis W.
Dennis W.
Thank you so very much for your support on Patreon. We appreciate you. We are going to be doing the election night live stream. That is something we haven't talked about yet. So we're already planning that. We're going to go live at
6:30 p.m. Eastern time.
And that's going to be on election night, November 5th.
Yeah, so we're planning something big. It's going to be good. We're going to have guests.
Yep.
We're going to do it up. We have an in-house producer who's my editor, our editor on YouTube. It's going to be great. It's going to be really fantastic, and we welcome you and hope that you'll join us.
Yes. So there are many things coming up to look forward to. We appreciate all of your support in helping us grow, helping us reach our goals, and helping us hopefully change hearts and minds. So
and you can also become a Patreon supporter, patreon.com/IDoubtItPodcast. And if there are, listen, if there are any wealthy benefactors out there who would like to pay us $100,000 per video, like just one video a week, totaling $400,000 for a month, and a $100,000 sign-on bonus like Dave Rubin and Tim Pool got, we're open. Again, that phone number, 657-464-7609, or you can just email.
The only caveat...
IDoubtItAtDollarMore.com.
The only caveat, unfortunately, is that we will continue to say what we want to say. So, sorry about that.
Well, but hopefully, you know, it'll be a different situation where we're not just parodying propaganda from the Kremlin.
Yes. Yeah.
Good job, Tim Pool. Everyone's totally surprised, by the way, by this.
Mm.
We don't have to talk about it, but let's...
Yeah, well... You talked about it already, so.
Yeah, well, we don't have to continue.
It was addressed.
All right. Thank you, guys. We appreciate you very much.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Stalemocracy, facing down pessimistic politics with realistic optimism.
So, like I was saying earlier on the show, related to consuming a lot of news, this was a particularly difficult week because there was yet another school shooting in America, this time in Georgia. And tell me if you agree with this, Jesse, because I think that you consumed at least some of the breaking news coverage. I heard a lot of, from journalists, here we are yet again.
Mm-hmm.
This is happening again. This has happened too many times. Like, I was
kind
getting
of a tonal shift from the media.
Yeah, I was getting a vibe that there was an overt, we're sick of talking about this, we're sick of covering this, we're sick of this happening, when is something going to be done? And I haven't really noticed that before. And I know people are always saying, is this going to be the moment there's change? I'm not necessarily speaking to that, because I don't think it's going to be the moment that we have change. But I am noticing that, at least as far as the media is concerned, that they're not trying to just be straightforward. Here's the thing that's happening. They're like, this is fucking happening again.
Yeah, it seems like a tonal shift, slow, gradual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was a moment, of course, because Republicans are responding to this in the same way that they always do, with thoughts and prayers, and this isn't the time to talk about politics. And you had J.D. Vance, who said that, unfortunately, school shootings are a fact of life,
mm-hmm.
going full, you know, Bill O'Reilly on us, who after the most deadly mass shooting in United States history said that it was the price of freedom.
Yeah. You know, like in Canada, they have these all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They're price of freedom. The UK, also very free. Mm-hmm. They have mass shootings constantly. Australia, also equally free. And they have just a litany of mass shootings.
Right.
Come on.
Well, and people have, you know, addressed the issue of figures like J.D. Vance or Donald Trump appearing before huge screens of bulletproof glass while they're saying that, you know, your kids, it's just the price of freedom. It's the fact of life.
Yeah, what did Donald Trump say? We're just going to have to get over it.
Right.
He said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Governor Brian Kemp, governor of Georgia, took the similar approach as his fellow Republicans, where he was asked by a reporter to talk about what can be done here. What can we do to stop this from happening as far as policy goes? And what do you know? Governor Brian Kemp said it's really not the time to talk about that.
And I just ask for prayers.
Governor,
thank you.
Is there any more your office can do to prevent shootings like this?
Well, look, we've done a tremendous amount on school safety, but today is not the day for politics or policy. Today is the day for an investigation to mourn these precious Georgians that we have lost, to thank the first responders that went, you know, into the line of fire, the school staff, superintendent, the principal, and others that are just trying to hold this community together. That's what we need to be focused on right now. We also had a tragic loss of a firefighter in Greene County earlier today before this event happened, with an explosion that killed the life of a first responder that, again, was running in to danger when many people were trying to run out. And that's what the focus needs to be on tonight. I would ask everybody to continue to keep this community, these victims, and these educators and these men and women in law enforcement in your thoughts and prayers. Thank you.
Just a ghoulish piece of shit. Listen, he took it a step further than just the thoughts and prayers, or even that this isn't a time for politics. He literally said with his stupid fucking mouth, this is not the time for policy, even.
Right.
And then tries to, like, juxtapose it in a similar, oh, this is also similar to the firefighter who lost his life. Is that also not a time for policy? You don't want to be questioning what kind of deregulation has happened in your state, that an explosion took place, and what were the causes of that? You don't want to investigate that? You don't want to look into that? I mean, obviously not, if you don't want to even look into what can be done to curtail the killing of students and teachers at their work. No, we don't want to look at policy, y'all. Just thoughts and prayers. That's all we got to offer right now. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, and the person that you said to focus on thoughts and prayers at the beginning of the clip was actually the sheriff as well. And I left that in so that you could hear that there was really, everyone was on the same page with really focusing on thoughts and prayers. And it reminded me, actually, do you remember when, I don't know, it used to be a thing that everyone would go on social media after a shooting and say thoughts and prayers? Do you remember when that used to be a thing?
Yeah. I think it kind of ended, well, maybe this is just my estimation of when it ended, is when Anthony Jeselnik, his comedy special, there's a bit in there where he talks about people who make it about themselves.
Yeah.
Like, oh, don't forget about me. Thoughts and prayers. Like, it's meaningless. You're offering nothing.
And that's what Brian Kemp just offered. Nothing.
Yeah, because if thoughts and, like, it's the same shit that people say every fucking time the pile of dead kids grows larger, is thoughts and prayers. If thoughts and prayers worked, there would be no more dead kids. There would not be incidents where a parent buys a troubled teenager an AR-15, which is what happened in this case, and then the kid goes in and mows down his fellow students and teachers.
Yeah, he had been interviewed by the FBI for making a threat online. And then his dad bought him in a rifle.
AR-15, yeah.
Months after that happened. So I think, again, one thing that I have tried to center in my taking all of this information in is, again, the, like, humanity, and not forgetting the stories of the people that were lost, the people that were killed. And they were interviewing a lot of the students in the media, and some of these interviews were not good.
Some were very wild, wildly irresponsible, that they're broadcasting live. Students talk about watching certain teachers be murdered.
Yeah.
And, like, that could have been a family member watching, learning for the very first time that their family member was killed.
I also heard multiple news anchors, and again, they're just journalists. They're not trained in, you know, they're not therapists. But I heard multiple journalists when they were interviewing some of these kids that were present for the shooting say, this is something that's going to affect you your entire life.
Yeah, you may never heal from this.
And I'm like, you know, may or may not be true, honestly. May or may not be true. We don't know, right? But is it helpful to say that? Yeah. Do they need to be worrying about that right now? Can they just kind of focus on right now what's happening?
Is that your role as a reporter?
Yeah.
Are you?
They don't need to be told that now they're scarred for life and their life is going to be focused on this the rest of their life. They don't need to be told that right now. But Gail King actually did a really good interview with a student who was present, and one of the teachers who died, because there were two teachers and two students that were killed. One of the teachers who was killed was actually his teacher. And so I think this was actually a good example of how to do one of these interviews with Gail King.
A short time ago, we spoke to another student. His name is Isaac Sanguma. He was walking back to his class at the time of the shooting. Isaac, thank you so much for joining us. First, let me say, I'm so sorry that this has happened yet again in this country. I'm so sorry that we have to talk to you under these circumstances. You know, when the story broke yesterday, it was tough to hear. Once again, here we go. I can't imagine what it was like for you who was there at the time. Describe for us, if you will, where you were, what you heard, and what you saw.
So basically, it was like around 10:20, and I asked my teacher to go use the restroom. And I was going to the restroom, I went to go see AP. So I went to go see an AP, and she said she was dealing with something very important. So as I'm walking around, I go to the atrium, and I see three cops. And as I'm walking by, I'm walking back. I go to the restroom, and I don't know. I think I heard like a boom, boom. But at first, it wasn't like a gunshot. Like, it didn't come to my mind as it was a gunshot. My instincts was just to run back to class. Plus, I seen like red sirens, you know, red lights in the ceiling and stuff like that. So I just ran back to class, and I seen my teacher and other teachers getting their students that were drinking water and in the bathroom, getting their kids to get in the classroom. And it didn't feel real.
You know, so we have heard that we have lost two teachers and two students. Did you know any of the people who were no longer with us?
Yes, one of the teachers was my algebra teacher. She was my fourth period teacher. That same morning, she walked up to me, and I had threw up yesterday, so she asked me if I was okay. And she was asking me to come to class on time, because, you know, my class is like right across the whole school, so I'd be coming to class late. She was begging me to come to class on time today. And I didn't know that was going to be my last time seeing her and talking to her.
I know, Isaac. So how are you processing this?
It don't feel real. I just can't believe my teacher, somebody that I see every day, you know, it just don't feel real.
Before you go, Isaac, tell us what she was like. What was her name? What was she like?
Miss Ermy, Miss Ermy, when I first came into class, Miss Ermy, she be telling corny jokes. And at the time, it's just like, you know, when you were a student, you're just like, what is she talking about? But now it's just like, dang, like, you know. And Miss Ermy, she was real, like, she was real nice. I'm not going to lie, my freshman year, I didn't pass algebra, so I'm retaking algebra my junior year. And she never made me feel ashamed about it. She never made me feel dumb. You could get a question wrong on the board, and she not going to make you feel dumb. She really make you, you know, she'll make you feel welcome. And all she do is just tell random jokes, and, you know, she really make you feel welcome, and she'll help you out. I'm not really good at math, but I just got the understanding of math just this year, being 3 weeks of school.
Isaac,
really
I
nice.
Know this. I know this. You will never forget Miss Ermy. You will never forget the day yesterday. I'm glad you're okay. I think you still have a lot of processing to do. I'm very sorry this has happened to you. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And I know it's a weird thing to be talking to kids after this happens, but I think it may be helpful for them sometimes in some ways to kind of talk about this. And you even noticed that he was like kind of smiling, and I think he appreciated being able to talk about what he remembered about his teacher.
Yeah.
Even though he was recounting a very traumatic experience.
I think it probably very possibly has efficacy for other kids too, to witness, you know.
Right.
Because at some point we're going to reach a saturation level with this bullshit where most people are going to be connected in some degree to this kind of occurrence, and people are going to be fed the fuck up. We are reaching that point now, and I think we are on the precipice of some movement taking place. Listen, if Democrats get a majority in the House and the Senate, like an unfuckable with majority, you know, a non-Manchin cinema type majority, and we win the White House and they fail to act, then they deserve whatever comes their way electorally. But it's going to take all of us to actually put the pressure on, to criticize when criticism is necessary and pressure when it's necessary, which is always to get them to do the right thing and rapidly, aggressively. Structural change is what we need in this country, especially on this issue.
Right. So we would love to know what you think about this. 657-464-7609, or you can send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. So I've been watching a lot of Donald Trump's appearances. He's been actually making quite a few appearances in the media lately.
I was going to say, for a guy who's not campaigning, he's not doing a ton of rallies, he sure is out there a lot.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not going well for him, but he's doing a lot of it. And one thing that I heard him say, he was asked, I think it was an NBC News reporter talking to him about Roe v. Wade, and obviously the Republicans are afraid of what's going to happen to them electorally, in part because of what they have done to abortion rights in this country and the impact that has had on women across the country. And so Donald Trump was asked if he has any regrets about his instrumental role in having overturned Roe v. Wade by appointing three Supreme Court justices to do just that.
Which is anathema to him. That's not in his DNA. He's not wired that way.
Yeah.
He doesn't even ask God for forgiveness. Right. That's how little regret this fucking guy has.
Yeah. So he said no regrets, like you predicted there, Jesse. Good job. And he said no regrets, and I heard this, and I started thinking of all the stories of women that I have read about, that I have heard about, that I have researched for my videos over the course of, is it 2 years now since Roe was overturned?
Yeah.
And this idea came to me to kind of put together a little video for it. And so I did that, and we're going to play it. But I'm going to link to it in the show notes so that you can watch it as well. I'm going to see how it comes across, I guess, just listening to the audio. I think it will still work.
Yeah, I think so.
But the important thing about here is not the video, but actually running a fundraiser again for the National Abortion Federation. Now, abortion funds across the country are in crisis mode.
Drying up.
And
because the demand is so high,
right?
They just can't shoulder the weight anymore.
Right. And some people's travel needs are so extensive, they need to travel states away to get care now because of the bans across the country, that they're sometimes needing thousands of dollars in funding in order to get an abortion.
Which, by the way, just as a reminder for those of you out there who may not know, an abortion fund, especially the National Abortion Federation, does a couple of different things. They support abortion providers, but then they also support people who are seeking abortions and live in a state in a draconian fascist regime, and they can't get an abortion, so they have to travel to a state where they can receive that health care. So they are oftentimes supplementing or just paying outright for travel, for hotel, for daycare, for the procedure, and they are in desperate need to help all of these people whose lives will be inexorably changed, altered for the worse, if they don't receive the health care they need.
Right. So we're doing a fundraiser again this year. We did one last year, and we're trying to beat our fundraiser from last year. That's kind of the goal. And
we raised meaning through our platform, raised $15,000 for the National Abortion Federation, and we're really hoping for 20 grand this time.
Right. So I'm going to link to this video in the show notes, and the fundraiser is on this video on YouTube. If you can donate, please, we would love that. If you cannot donate, I would ask that you share the video with someone that you feel like needs to hear the message, and maybe that will help spread some people who can donate to the fundraiser so that we can help kind of cover this emergency situation that we are in with abortion funds in this country.
Many people have asked me what my position is on abortion and abortion rights, especially since I was proudly the person responsible for the ending of Roe v. Wade.
Now, 14 states have near total bans on abortion. Seven others restrict it between 6 and 18 weeks of pregnancy.
From Idaho, Florida, Alabama, South Carolina, Wisconsin, Arizona, Arkansas, Louisiana, Tennessee.
I was shocked that the state of Texas wanted me to continue a pregnancy where I would have to wait until the baby dies in my belly or dies at birth.
So the exact words were, we have to prove to the ethics board and the medical board of this hospital that your life is in danger before we can intervene.
A room full of women with searing stories of trying to get medical care. But state laws have tied their doctors' hands.
Every single one of my son's organs were growing outside of his body.
Torture. That is torture. That's monstrous. Torture.
Missing the skull.
The doctor looked at me and he said, if I do anything or if I intervene, I will possibly be arrested.
I continue to feel this baby move and knowing that I'm going to give birth and watch my child passed.
You start thinking about the women that have to drive across state lines. We've heard these stories.
I don't want to live in Texas anymore. I feel like I can't make a decision for myself, for my body and my family. And I feel like I'm trapped.
Idaho's laws are fueling an exodus of OBGYNs.
Do we have to wait until they are septic and have uncontrollable infection, have an ICU admission, need multiple blood transfusion at the brink of organ failure before we intervene? That's not how we practice medicine.
Basically, they said I had to carry my baby to bury my baby.
Everybody wanted to do this for 52 years, and I got it done.
So no regrets.
No regrets. No, I wouldn't have regrets.
So that is who is running for president right now.
Yeah.
And he's made several appearances this week that just remind you how terrible he is. Like, it's every single thing that he does is another reminder of how terrible he is.
And not terrible in a typical politician. Like, terrible as like the worst fucking type of human being there is, and this guy wants to be the leader of all of us.
Yeah, like if you worked in a cubicle with this guy,
yeah,
you'd be like, oh God, he's at work again. He's here again today. Can he quit his job and go home?
Yeah,
like,
you'd want to move.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to be around him. You wouldn't want to talk to him. You wouldn't want to be near him. And he gave us another example of this today. And I seriously cannot believe he's continuing with this, because you would think at least that the attorneys around him are able to say, hey, dude, can you not with this? But he yet again, he made an appearance. He was attempting to overturn the $5 million defamation case with the E. Jean Carroll case in New York. And he made an appearance there.
And all three judges on the panel said, pound fucking sand, get lost, no.
Yeah, and he was complaining at this press conference that he held about his attorneys. He said he was disappointed in them.
He didn't ask, there was no questions. He just left at the end. There were no questions. So not really a press conference, just a statement.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. So
I'm being the actually guy, just very technically not a press conference.
Sure. I didn't know a press conference, one of the requirements was taking questions, but I can see how that is. Sure. So Trump went on to talk about accusations that were made, because, you know, he's been accused of sexual misconduct from so many different women that I kind of have to, like, let you know in this instance, he's not actually talking about E. Jean Carroll. He's talking about a different woman in the clip that we're getting ready to play. He's talking about Jessica Leeds in this clip. So you're going to hear Donald Trump, and this is a familiar line that you've heard from him before, defending himself against accusations, trying to make it seem like it's just impossible that it could have happened. And one of the reasons that he says it's impossible is because, well, he wouldn't have chosen her.
Now, there were two witnesses. One is a woman who's followed me for years. She said in 1979, I was in an airplane with her, commercial flight, and we became very intimate. I just sat down. I think I had the book, The Art of the Deal. I was famous then, too. I've been famous for a long time. And we're sitting in first class, according to her. Never happened, by the way. Totally made up story. She's a Clinton person, too, by the way. Big Clinton person. She made up the story. And so many years ago, and I think it would be 1979. One of my many people behind me could correct it, but I think she said 1979. That's a long time ago. And I sat down. I believe I had some pretty big success then, and I was being talked about a lot. Maybe The Art of the Deal was out, you know, sometime after that. I'm not sure. But I was well known. And passengers are coming into the plane. And she said, I was making out with her. And then, after 15 minutes, and then she changed her story a couple of times. Maybe it was quicker. That I grabbed her at a certain part, and that was when she had enough. Now, so think of how the impracticality of this. I'm famous. I'm in a plane. People are coming into the plane. And I'm looking at a woman, and I grab her, and I start kissing her and making out with her. What are the chances of that happening? What are the chances? And frankly, I know you're going to say it's a terrible thing to say, but it couldn't have happened. It didn't happen. And she would not have been the chosen one. She would not have been the chosen one. She has gone around for years saying this story. Everywhere I go, she says this story. And it's a total lie. Now, I assume she'll sue me now for defamation, like I got sued by E. Jean Carroll.
Let's hope she does.
Yeah.
Also, he says, well, and I start kissing her. That doesn't even, so who does that? I don't know. How about the guy who says, I just start kissing. It's like a magnet.
Yes, I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. Just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it.
I didn't know you had the quote. That's great.
And that's why I played that full clip, because he's trying to also illustrate he was famous at that time. So he would have been getting attention from people. And he's like, how improbable is this? I'm already famous. I would just start kissing her. And it's like, dude, you said when you're a star, they let you do it. Like, you right. already said that.
This is on the record for almost a full decade now. We've known about this. So what makes it impossible?
Right.
You're rapist freak.
And again, when he said this,
of course, the would not be the chosen one.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
and before he said it, he prefaced it by saying, I know this isn't a good thing to say, or I know this isn't a nice thing, or however he phrased it. You should have seen the attorney to his side.
Oh, was he squirming?
Not Alina Haba. Alina Haba didn't indicate anything either way. But the guy behind him was like, oh, God, what's... Oh, God.
Yeah, I bet.
But I don't feel sorry for them. So,
yeah,
you know, they're there of their own free will. So Donald Trump also made an appearance where he was asked a pointed policy question. And since he's running for president of the United States and has been president of the United States, you would think that, you know, it's actually easy for him to take policy questions and answer policy questions.
Yeah, he only answered two questions at the end of this economic club of New York or whatever it is. And one was about deficits, and that was a rambling shit show of an answer.
Yeah.
Just absolute nonsense. And then he got asked about childcare.
Yes.
And asked specifically, what legislation would you forward to make it easier for family? It was asked a specific question.
And see if you can pick up on any specific policy that would help someone with the cost of childcare.
If you win in November, can you commit to prioritizing legislation to make childcare affordable? And if so, what specific piece of legislation will you advance?
Well, I would do that. And we're sitting down. You know, I was somebody. We had Senator Marco Rubio, and my daughter Ivanka was so impactful on that issue. It's a very important issue. But I think when you talk about the kind of numbers that I'm talking about, that because look, child care is, couldn't, you know, there's something, you have to have it. In this country, you have to have it. But when you talk about those numbers compared to the kind of numbers that I'm talking about by taxing foreign nations at levels that they're not used to, but they'll get used to it very quickly. And it's not going to stop them from doing business with us, but they'll have
a very substantial tax when they send product into our country. Those numbers are so much bigger than any numbers that we're talking about, including child care, that it's going to take care. We're going to have, I look forward to having no deficits within a fairly short period of time, coupled with the reductions that I told you about on waste and fraud and all of the other things that are going on in our country, because I have to stay with child care. I want to stay with child care, but those numbers are small relative to the kind of economic numbers that I'm talking about, including growth, but growth also headed up by what the plan is that I just told you about. We're going to be taking in trillions of dollars, and as much as child care is talked about as being expensive, it's relatively speaking not very expensive compared to the kind of numbers we'll be taking in. We're going to make this into an incredible country that can afford to take care of its people, and then we'll worry about the rest of the world. Let's help other people. But we're going to take care of our country first. This is about America first. It's about make America great again. We have to do it because right now we're a failing nation. So we'll take care of it. Thank you. Very good question. Thank you.
Very good question. Very terrible fucking answer.
Yeah.
For him to say, well, we're going to be taking in trillions, thousands of billions of dollars we're going to be taking in. He means through tariffs. So that's a tariff that gets paid to the United States government. Well, then what are you going to do with that money that you've earned from those tariffs? Are you going to help people pay their child care? Because just because a family's output, if it's, let's say, $2,500 to $4,500 a month for child care, it might be small on the scale of international trade, but it's not small on the scale of a family who can't afford that.
Right.
Just, he's completely out of touch and also not an answer in any fucking way.
Yeah. And J.D. Vance was also asked this week, and he said that
I heard grandma
and grandpa.
Yeah.
Might want to watch the kids, or maybe an aunt or an uncle.
Yeah, put your family to work.
Oh my God, these people have no plan, and they're trying to convince us right now that they want to make IVF government funded.
Oh yeah, right. Well, you know, they're the party of family values, Brittany.
Right. I mean,
they're the party propped up by evangelical Christians and white Christian nationalists and regular run-of-the-mill Christian nationalists.
Yes, yes. Well, I actually did come across an interesting news package from CBS News where they are following charismatic Christians, and they are particularly excited for Donald Trump and supporting Donald Trump. And charismatic Christians are like tent revival Christians.
Yeah, the same denomination or adjacent that I grew up in.
Yes. So yeah.
Speaking in tongues and yeah. the whole deal. Faith healing, prosperity, Christianity, all of the fucking nonsense.
Well, then you'll feel really seen by this news package is what I'm hearing.
In Eau Claire, Wisconsin, this summer, a tent revival attracted hundreds of charismatic Christians to receive revelation and wade into the gospel of Trumpism.
The Holy Spirit lives inside of you.
Tens of thousands joined online, all part of the so-called Courage Tour, a religious roadshow that is unapologetically political.
You can't make America great again until you restore an awakening with God again.
The goal? Motivate fellow charismatic Christians, many of whom don't belong to a formal church structure, but find God in wonders and miracles, to evangelize for Donald Trump all the way to November.
We believe it's time to release the roar of Christian voters across America.
Joshua Standifer is part of the Courage Tour.
Do you mean Christian voters, or do you mean pro-Trump Christian voters?
It's all the above.
It sounds to me like most of this messaging is pro-Trump.
You're literally seeing two sets of values and worldviews on display. And it just so happens one naturally aligns more to what we believe.
In Trump, evangelicals don't see an abrasive, thrice-married billionaire. They do see an anti-establishment leader strong on abortion, gender issues, and Israel.
I want people to vote because he stands for something.
Brother and sister attendees Jackie Brokaw and David Jansen.
2020,
is a fraud, and everybody knows it.
The number of Christians that are in this area, if they would vote, they could swing this county, which would probably swing the rest of the state.
The Courage Tour targets key counties in battleground states, including places where Trump lost narrowly in 2020. In addition to voter mobilization, organizers want charismatic Christians as poll watchers and workers.
What we are seeing here today is the most targeted and tactical voter mobilization effort done by Christian nationalists ever.
Matthew Taylor has written extensively about this new form of religious activism that fuses political outcomes with divine intervention.
What is the political import, possibly, in the 2024 election of events like this?
Well, if Trump wins, then that becomes a part of the impetus that Donald Trump can say, I don't just have a Democratic mandate, I have a divine mandate to change the country in accordance with the biblical values that these folks claim to have.
You won't have to vote anymore, my beautiful Christians.
Trump's election denialism electrified and galvanized charismatics online for weeks leading up to the January 6th Capitol riot.
January 6th was not an insurrection. It was an election fraud intervention.
Many of the people who were leaders in this movement also showed up on January 6th because they really believed that the election was being stolen.
As part of our visit to Eau Claire, we spoke with Lance Wallnau, a Courage Tour leader who rarely gives interviews about why he views Trump as anointed by God.
Pray for me, because I'm going to try to talk to some media folks that are here.
Tomorrow, we will hear from Wallnau on how Trump, a twice-divorced man with felony convictions, can maintain such a hold on charismatic Christians. For Eye on America, I'm Major Garrett in Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
I wish the media was more literate about these people's particular faith and talking points, because Major Garrett there would... There's a canned answer to that. They're going to say, well, David was a wicked man, but he was also a man after God's own heart. That's what they're going to say. They'll fucking say it every time. David, he sent Bathsheba, her husband, to die in combat, and then fucked her silly, or whatever.
What?
I mean, they probably don't go that far.
What?
But it's just, they're going to have an answer. They fucking have an answer. Just... Lance Wallnau is one of these guys I talk about a lot with my Bat Phone to Jesus segments. I think that's what we're calling them, the Bat Phone to Jesus segments.
Yep.
And
the red phone.
Yeah, he's just a white Christian nationalist. He wants his particular flavor of Christianity to rule everyone. Mm-hmm. They don't care if Donald Trump is actually a Christian. They know him not to be an actual Christian. But their particular worldview will be cemented and foisted upon the American people if Donald Trump comes into office. Because he's... untethered from liberty, from concepts like adhering to the Constitution.
Yeah, and I guess there's always part of me that is like, you know, listening to that student give his interview about his teacher that was killed. Like, are those going to be things that move the needle for certain conservatives or Trump supporters? And then when you make that comment about how they're always going to find a response, they're going to say, you know... that this happened for a reason, or, you know, I mean, there's like, always going to be some explanation to protect their fundamental and closely held beliefs.
When Major Garrett was interviewing that guy and he said, you know, that if you blend in religion, then people have an extra set parameters to justify their terrible views.
Right.
But if you can use religion to do it, you can convince people to do terrible, terrible shit if they feel like they have a mandate not from their political party, but from their deity, from their God.
Right.
That's scary.
Yeah. Well, I also saw a clip this week of a prominent online leftist commentator or a progressive commentator who was trying to make the argument that Project 2025 has been kind of overblown and that it's not as big of a threat as people are making it out to be. And I would just encourage you that if you're encountering that talking point in a progressive media, to be very weary of that and go read it for yourself. I mean, go take the days required to
and
read.
And maybe also be asking yourself, why am I watching Young Turks?
Anyway,
since you're dancing around it.
So, but go and read it for yourself if that's what you're going to take in. But again, if you haven't been following along with the Project 2025 stuff, we wrote a video about it. It's on Jesse's channel. You can search Dollemore Project 2025 and it will come right up. But there's a new New York Times article that sheds light on reporting about how close J.D. Vance is particularly to the Heritage Foundation, people involved directly in crafting Project 2025 and who are working behind the scenes to ensure that if Donald Trump wins the election, they move in and start immediately getting to work the way that we would want Democrats to do if they win the White House, the House, and the Senate, except for we would be expanding rights for people and helping make their lives better. And the Republicans seek to take rights away from people and make life harder for everyday Americans.
Under his eye.
And this is just a brief rundown of a report that J.D. Vance endorsed.
Blessed be the fruit, Brittany.
From the architects of Project 2025.
This time, it's J.D. Vance endorsing a series of extremely restrictive conservative essays on how families are made in America and what those families should look like. The New York Times unearthed the 2017 set of essays, which Vance praised and wrote an introduction for. It is a Heritage Foundation report, including with arguments that women should get pregnant younger instead of using IVF treatments as, quote, magic pills to delay motherhood for professional advancement, that the ideal family is anchored by heterosexual parents, that abortion should be considered unthinkable in America, and that hunger is a good motivator for greater employment.
Wow.
And it's not just that J.D. Vance wrote the introduction and praised this volume of work with these essays as admirable. He was the keynote speaker at the public release of the report at the Heritage Foundation's offices in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, the denial from Donald Trump and the campaign that they have nothing to do with Project 2025 is laughable, is a word that comes to mind. It's absolutely just subterfuge.
Right, but saying that hunger is a great motivator for Americans to find work.
Yeah.
I mean, in addition to the stuff about how women should get pregnant younger and younger and abortion should become unthinkable in this country, they're opposed to the spread of IVF, which is interesting because now they're talking about government-funded IVF, huh? Mm-hmm. I wonder if they're just saying that, you guys.
I wonder.
But this is also the case when every time Donald Trump says something about abortion, it's clear that Donald Trump doesn't really know what he feels about abortion. We don't really know what he really feels because he's not saying what he really feels. But what I want you guys to know is that it doesn't actually matter what Donald Trump really feels about abortion. What matters is who is around him.
Yeah.
And he has someone like J.D. Vance, who was the keynote speaker for that report, who wrote the introduction for that report, who fundamentally believes those things and wants to implement policies that will create an America that he sees in his vision. So Donald Trump is going to be guided by people like J.D. Vance. And so when you hear Donald Trump asked if he's going to sign a national abortion ban and not know how to answer that question, it's because he knows that he has the Project 2025 people up his ass and that they are going to ban abortion at a federal level the moment they get the chance. And here's Donald Trump struggling with how to answer that question.
Federal abortion bill, if it came across your desk. Is that
well,
right?
You don't need it.
You won't need it, but hypothetically, if it
well,
did.
I don't want to answer a hypothetical. You don't need it.
Yeah, you don't want to answer a hypothetical because you're trapped between what public opinion is, the overwhelming majority of Americans. And it's not like 54%. It's upwards of like 80% of Americans are absolutely here for abortion rights. They don't want those rights curtailed.
The vast majority of Americans support abortion rights. And I believe that if we were to increase education, we could get a lot more people on board with not having any limits on abortion rights. But, you know, we'll save that conversation for another day because the important thing to remember is that Donald Trump is going to ban abortion at a federal level. This comes down to his associates who are also going to use Comstock, the Comstock Act, to ban abortion pills. And this is another bummer because Cori Bush lost her primary, and it's a bummer because she was actually the one leading the effort to repeal the Comstock Act before Republicans can use it to ban abortion pills. And the person who won the primary, he doesn't even know what the Comstock Act was.
He was propped up again by AIPAC.
Yeah, he was asked what it was because she again was leading the charge.
Yeah.
And he couldn't even describe what the Comstock Act was.
So it's one more thing taken away from us by AIPAC and their insane funding of people they just want out because they didn't support the genocide in Gaza.
And it's also why the type of Democrat that you elect matters.
Yeah, for sure. Also, by the way, I looked it up while you were talking. This is from Forbes. Broad support for abortion rights. Gallup polls shows 85% of Americans believe abortion should be legal in at least certain circumstances as of May, higher than when polling began in 1975, which was 76% then. So it's just an overwhelmingly Americans are repulsed by the Republicans' vision for the world. They might not just say it that way.
Yeah. So I feel like we have some important criticism for the Republicans. But you know what we're not hearing a lot of from the Republicans is important criticism about Democrats, like actual relevant criticism of policy visions or...
You, every once in a while, you get a glimmer of it, though.
From Republicans?
Yeah, every once in a while.
Okay, and I don't feel like it's happening quite often. Do you have an example that you want to think of or...
Well, Jesse Waters once in a while has something really smart and funny and poignant to say.
I was like, what's happening right now? What is he thinking of?
Was I really playing that straight?
Yeah.
You didn't know what I was doing?
No.
I'm leading you to the hilarious clip?
Oh, no. Yeah. I'm like, wait, when were they? What is happening?
No, dipshit Jesse Waters.
Okay, so Jesse Waters, we all know who he is.
Man, that would have been so funny if you just, if I'd been less awesome with my straight man act.
Yeah, I guess. So Jesse Waters, normally attacking homeless people on Fox News. He was talking about Tim Walz. And did you know that Jesse Waters has this very strange thing about straws? Like, he doesn't think that men should be drinking from straws.
Even though there are countless pictures of him drinking from a straw.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you'll hear what I mean in this clip. This is him attacking Tim Walz for something very important.
Women love masculinity. And women do not love Tim Walz. So that should just tell you about how masculine Tim Walz is. The other day, you saw him with a vanilla ice cream shake. Had a straw in it.
Oh.
Again, that tells you everything. Judge Jeanine.
Listen, I will never stop being amused at these objectively non-traditionally masculine men. Jordan Peterson, Jesse Waters, these types, rambling on incessantly about what women love about masculinity, and then being so fucking insecure about his own masculinity that he thinks drinking from a straw is not what the fuck?
Well, no, actually, he is masculine, and here's how you know he's masculine. It's because straws remind him of dicks. And it's actually peak masculinity to focus a great deal of your time on whether your use of like everyday objects conveys your love of dicks to other people.
Yeah. So does he not use a pencil or a pen?
That could be very dick related.
Yeah.
So
does he not drink like a tall boy of a beer?
Because
that's too phallic.
Too close to a dick. Yeah. It's going to convey to people that he might like dicks.
So hot dogs are out for this guy.
No hot dogs. No hot dogs. And
No sausages.
Huh. Yeah, he's missing out on a lot of good stuff because, again, in order to be masculine, you have to constantly be worried about whether or not the thing that you're putting in or near your mouth could remind other people of a dick. Yeah.
What about this, though?
Sounds exhausting.
What about gay dudes who are very masculine? They like dicks.
I think he's going to be very confused by that. As an alpha high T male, I think that Jesse Waters is not going to know what to do with
you
that.
As one yourself or as one him?
As Jesse is. Yes. Because unfortunately, I am just
just a lady who doesn't ask questions.
A sad little lady who
is
doesn't
this
ask
true?
If it's true.
Full
By the
circle.
Way,
we're ending it there.
What
we're
I love,
ending it there.
No,
full circle.
Is Elon Musk, has he ever talked to a lady? I don't know.
I don't know. He's had kids with like 50 of them.
Yeah. They have to be asking if things are true around him. I can't believe he's never heard this before. I'm pretty sure he's heard it before. He has to have heard it before. Is it true? We've said it to your face. We know. Come on, Elon.
Push chill.
Come on.
We are going to leave you there. We love and appreciate you. This has been a good time. Actually, a better show than I thought it would be.
Because you were kind of feeling down.
I was not in a great mood. My back is fucked. I don't know what I did. But like between my shoulder blades is a nightmare right now.
But also it's been just a hard week with the news and everything.
Yeah, I did two videos today and I had six planned. And yeah. I'm done. After the second one, I'm like, I need a fucking break.
Yeah, it's been difficult. So we hope that you are also kind of leaving this listening experience not feeling totally down about the state of the world. And
you know what you should do if you're feeling down is get yourself a fountain drink and jab a straw in there and just go to town on that little skinny hollow dick.
How sad is he, honestly, that he can't even enjoy a milkshake with a straw?
Very weird. Like,
I think Tim Walz is just a beautiful human being that I would endlessly want to spend time with. Like, I think he would just be a fantastic person to be around.
Yeah.
And Jesse Waters is so, like, antithetical to everything Tim Walz represents and is. I would not want to spend one moment around him.
Maybe we're not done yet. Let me ask, what kind of a life do you think it is that you're constantly just obsessed and consumed with how people are perceiving you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do they think I'm gay? Am I masculine or not masculine enough? If I drink from the straw, and what kind of a life is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, and again, I don't feel bad for Jesse Waters because he is using his power and his wealth to harm other people.
By the way, not wealth he like earned because of merit. He was born into like a rich publishing family. He's a Nepo baby.
Yeah, but again, to be concerned about whether or not men are using straws, like, please, it's with these toxic alpha bros online,
yeah,
and they're constantly thinking about this stuff. My dad was someone like this. I was raised by someone like this, and it's exhausting. The constant need to be like a tough guy, and you can't just do normal things because you're constantly worried about, again, dicks. Like, it's fine. Relax. The straw is not a dick, okay? Just drink your milkshake and enjoy your life. It's all right.
Yeah.
But don't enjoy your life because you're a dick, Jesse Waters.
You are a dick. Yes. Maybe that's what he's a. All right, we're going to figure something out. There's a joke there somewhere. You guys can email us. idoubtit@dollamore.com. We'd love to invite you to this conversation. 657-464-7609. The other thing to which we would love to invite you is to become a member of the Patreon family. Patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast. For as little as $2 a month, you can help support this work. And if you have $2, you might have $4. And if you do, we're going to put a link to the National Abortion Federation fundraiser. And if you have $2, $3, $4, $5, any amount of money would go a long way toward bolstering that fund and doing very good work to impact the lives of very real people. It's important. We love and appreciate you. Thank you very much. We'll see you next time. For Brittany Page, I'm Jesse Dollamore. And this has been I Doubt It.